This episode contains adult language, physical abuse, and verbal abuse. Listener discretion is advised. You're listening to It Doesn't End Here. Hey listeners, and welcome back to the pod. Last episode, we met Amanda, a clinical psychologist who is sharing her story about her marriage to Chris. Amanda shared with us how she had thought about calling off the wedding the night before, and also how the honeymoon didn't go as planned.
I don't know about anybody else's experience, but I know in mine, when I first met him and for a good long while, I only saw him be erratic and hostile and aggressive with me, but that started to change. And all of a sudden, it's almost like the lid was off and he could not contain it anymore. You know, it's one thing to get in a heated argument. Maybe there's some cussing or something, but it's another thing when the other person is throwing things, calling you names, putting you down, putting your family down. Then they throw in that it's your fault. That is not accurate. That is gaslighting. I mean, I got accused of sleeping with everybody. My teachers, my advisors, my co-students, peers, whatever you want to call them. I mean, it was hysterical. And it got to the point where my world was just getting smaller and smaller and smaller because he's alienated a lot of my friends. He's alienated my parents. He's now alienating like my grad school people. Like my world was getting snuffed out. That was alarming. And then, you know, we get into the year, things are just happening. The frequency of the blowups are getting more consistent. They're starting to be like once a week. I notice that my time with some of my friends is really dropping off. The friends that think he's amazing, everything's fine, but the friends that might have known, it's becoming distant. My parents, he's kind of icing them out a little bit. Oh, because it was election season. Oh, shit. Chris was known to be very provoking if he didn't like your opinion, hence the whole religious thing. He kept poking me. I don't remember what he was saying, but I remember that argument. He kept poking, you know, playing devil's advocate. Have you ever been around someone that they're an asshole and they're like, oh, I just like to play devil's advocate? It's like, no, you're just an asshole. Don't date guys that say that. That's a huge red flag. Devil's advocate is not fun. So he kept poking about this presidential race with my parents, specifically my mother, who they are a very conservative, highly conservative couple. So he would like be emailing them this political propaganda crap that was very anti-Republican and, you know, pro-Democrat. And just, you know, those bullshit emails and chain emails about, it was so bad. But he kept firing these off. So it's pissing them off. And he also, at that point, had started being very snarky and being very biting in his sarcasm, specifically towards my mom. Not really so much towards my dad, but towards my mom. So that was getting heated up. I naturally wanted to go to his parents' house more. And so we were always there just by nature because I just loved his parents' house. It was so fun and so freeing, and I could just be myself 100%. I could laugh as loud as I wanted to. I could be in the middle of a problem and his mom would like talk me through it. I mean, it was so supportive and lovely. So the fact that I was there every weekend was more about how much I loved being around them. And I remember at one point being honest with my best friend in grad school, which she had known about a lot of stuff. I finally came clean with my advisor, the one that was good looking, because eventually the walls just started coming in and I couldn't keep up with all my academics and my research and my clinical work and this relationship. So what started to suffer was my thesis research. And I remember my advisor getting just really frustrated with me because I was being so slow with it. But at the same time, that was the only thing that didn't have a deadline. So it was the one thing that was like getting pushed aside. You think you tell the truth, but now I look back and I know I would only tell little portions of the truth. Never did I really come out and say, Chris is a psychopath, like abusive, just always, you know, on me. He's accused me of sleeping with you. Like I could never say all that, right? So I'd just have to say, you know, we're having problems and our marriage isn't really good right now. And he's really upset with me for spending all my time in grad school and this and that. And I'm really struggling. So, I mean, it was never like the whole truth. It was always little portions of the truth. Unless he slipped in front of someone. So I just remember just being really terrified because I was like, I'm now married to this person and it's getting worse. But at the same time, I still thought I loved him. I remember thinking to myself, if it just stays here, like stays at this level, I can do this. And that is sick. Okay, so he blows up at me once a week and calls me a bitch and a slut and says I'm a terrible person, I'm a terrible wife, I'm a terrible friend, I'm a terrible graduate student, I'm going to be a horrible psychologist, I'm a terrible dog owner. By the way, yeah, oh, my dog's over there. And he totally thinks I'm a wonderful dog owner. And his outburst just got just worse and worse and worse. And then it got to the point where he would say, I wish I could break your nose. I wish you were a guy so I could hit you. And that type of threat just kept being thrown out there every time we would argue. And so it was this trajectory in time where it's like when he had his very first incident after 6 months of us being together, it just over time kept going up, up, up. And the dots kept getting closer together in frequency. And at the time, I didn't know he wouldn't do it. I did not know that. There were two major incidents with a lot of minor ones in between. And when I say minor, I just mean the tantrums and the name calling and the accusing and the screaming and the I should have never married you and calling me a bitch and all the things. New Year's Eve, we are at a wedding. It was a local wedding in Stillwater. It was super fun. A gay wedding. Love a gay wedding. And we were done with the wedding and the reception. I remember we were driving to his friend's house who was having a New Year's Eve party. And I always had to drive because he had gotten a DUI a few years before. So back then, I'm not the most responsible person. At that time, I am now 23. I'm still living in Stillwater. I'm still in grad school. I'm still hanging out with young 20s people. And I'd had stuff to drink as well. And he always had me drive. So it's New Year's Eve and I am nervous as fuck. So I'm driving and I remember pulling into a gas station so he could go in and get beer. And I remember we were kind of bickering and we were bickering because I was scared, because I was driving, because I had been drinking and it was New Year's Eve. And I was angry because I'm tired of always putting myself in this situation. And it wasn't the first time that I had gotten upset that I was put in that situation, even though I take full responsibility for drinking myself. But again, being in your young 20s, you're not always making the best decisions anyway. But I realize now it's like, well, Amanda, why did you drink so much? Like, you didn't have to do that. But in your young 20s, you're like, of course I'm going to drink champagne at the wedding. Of course. So he gets back in the car with the beer and we're in the neighborhood of his friend. And we're still arguing because I'm mad. I'm mad that I'm in this position again. And I'm mad that he doesn't care. And I'm mad that he's mad. Instead of being like, you're right, this is happening way too often, or I always do this, you know, we need to just...
He didn't care.
Right.
That's ridiculous. You could get a DUI.
Right. Because in my profession, if you have something like that, that could affect your license. But I wasn't licensed yet. But still, it could follow you. And let alone, like, you know, just get in an accident or hurt someone. But we're in the car. I'm driving down the neighborhood. And we're arguing. All of a sudden, I feel his hand on the side of my head. And he pushes my head into the driver's side window. And just holds it there. Like pushing, 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 pushing. While I'm driving. Yes, while I'm driving. And he just held it there and just keeps pressing and pressing and pressing. So my head is being squished up against the window. And not only am I driving and it's dark and I've been drinking and it's New Year's and my head is being pushed into a window and I can't see the road very well and I feel out of control of my body, but now my head is feeling like it's being squished. And I don't know if the glass is going to break. That's, I mean, all I could think of was this glass just like combusting or something. And just, that's all I could think of, but it didn't happen. Thank God. But I'm just like, oh my gosh, like he's going to break the window with my head. Of course I'm crying and I'm like, stop, stop. And eventually he lets go. I don't remember if I dropped him off and I drove to my friend's house because I knew she was out of town for Christmas break, for fall or winter break, and sat in her driveway and called the local domestic violence shelter.
Do you remember what they said or do you remember what you said to them?
Everything that I could say, you know, remember in the moment or have words for.
What were you thinking that night after you had made that phone call and you were alone?
Well, it was definitely, it was on the road to like just complete acceptance. And, you know, in therapy, I do acceptance and commitment therapy as my primary therapy modality. And when the A of acceptance and commitment therapy is the acceptance piece, I was working towards that full-blown radical acceptance where it's this other level of acceptance where you see things as they are. And you're not trying to minimize them or deny them or dismiss them or gaslight yourself. You radically see everything as it is. And when you do that, you give yourself the power to do something about it. When you're still living in denial or avoidance, you're not giving yourself the full opportunity to see things as they are in order to create meaningful action. So I was working towards that, but I just wasn't there yet. So acceptance, and acceptance, that's what you came to when you finally created any meaningful action towards getting out of your situation, whether it be starting to finalize a plan or having a frank discussion with him or others in your family. Like those are all steps being taken that are meaningful that demonstrate, I am seeing this now. And when you see it, you can't unsee it. You can bide your time, but you can't unsee it. And I think that night was actually the first time that I could not unsee. There was something about what had happened that evening and calling that domestic violence hotline that solidified in my mind, I am seeing this now for what it is, and I need to do something. So that was like the step one in the biding my time until I got out. Get out smart. Get out safe. And sometimes what's smart is not just packing all your stuff and just like bailing in the middle of the night. Sometimes that's not the smart thing. If you are immediately being threatened in some way, then yes, you need to get out. You need to pack your bag and leave. Sometimes if an exit plan is not easily or readily available or safely available, the best thing you can do is to figure out your plan each and every step before you initiate it. Think about who you can tell. Think about where you can go. Think about what you can take. Make an opportunity for yourself to do that and then get trusted people to help you. I think people are so hesitant to just tell the whole story because once you do, you can't take that back. So people are afraid to do that because it's almost like one more nail that solidifies that board. It's like now that board is starting to get more nails in it. It's going to be harder to remove. So you got to stick to it. Now it's a commitment. After New Year's Eve, I knew this was not going to work. I knew I had to get out. I knew that we had to get divorced. But again, I didn't know what to do. I didn't know how to do it. So I was biding my time. And I think it was February. We were out with his parents in their hometown at a bar having fun. That's what we did. We would go to their local bar, have some beers, play shuffleboard, dance to the country music, jukebox. Like, it was fun. That was always my safe place until it wasn't. Something happened at the bar where he got mad at his own mom. And I believe she was dancing with another patron of the bar. And this is a small town. Like, everyone knows each other. Everyone's friendly. It's a community type feel. So whoever she was dancing with was probably like one of their neighbors. And it's just harmless fun. He thought it was inappropriate that she was doing that in front of her husband, you know, just that wasn't classy, that was disrespectful. So he got mad at her. It turned into the thing where they were kind of bickering back and forth. And I'm sitting back watching this and I'm like, wow, this is now happening to his mom. I had not seen that before. So I was like, oh my gosh. So now they're seeing it. I'm like, oh my gosh, they're seeing it now. We get home. I remember being alone with his mom and his dad. You know, his dad saying, I've talked to him before. I've told him that he shouldn't act like this. You know, I've talked to him about his temper and this and that. And his mom saying the same thing. I felt supported. I felt seen. I felt like they finally, like, we had a moment where they got it, which I think they knew because they had alluded that they've tried to talk to him before about his temper. So I go back to the room that we're staying in at their house. He's yelling at me. I don't even remember what he's saying because it's such a blur. But all of a sudden, I was lying on the bed and his hands were around my throat. He wasn't squeezing, but he had his hands around my throat and he was bouncing my head up and down, back and forth on the bed. Being like, you piece of shit, you're a bitch. I don't know why I fucking married you, like all these things. Again, I'm just scared because I don't know if his hands are going to go tighter. I don't know when he's going to stop. I don't know if he's going to do something else. And I remember that night, I remember at that point trying to call my parents and they're not answering. And then the next day we woke up and it's like, I didn't say anything. I just went on. But that was number two. That was number two where I said, I've got to get out of this.
Did he leave any like marks or bruises on you? Or like, was there anything that could have been noticeable to anyone else that this was taking place?
It's hard to describe because he had this way of hurting you without hurting you, if that makes any sense. He had this way of putting his hands on you, but without going too far. If we were out in public and he was mad at me or I was doing something wrong that he wasn't approving of, that he would pinch me really hard on my back or my shoulders, my lower back or my legs. So I did have bruises from fingers, but no one saw them. And if they did, they were so small, no one put together, oh, you got pinched. How many times do we see a bruise and maybe we think, oh, what happened? But we never think specifically like, oh, he's pinching her to death. We get bruises all the time. That actually pretty much was it. After that incident, I went home and I remember not too long after, because that was February, I left in March. So I remember very shortly after me saying, I'm done. This isn't working. We can't do this anymore. And I remember him talking me out of getting divorced, saying he would get better, saying he would change all the stuff. And he was good. I remember telling my advisor at the time we were either leaving to go to this meeting or it was after the meeting. And he asked me, he was like, so how are things with Chris? And I remember at the time saying, well, I told him about a week or so ago that this was done. And he swore he would work on things and get better. And now looking back, I can't imagine what my graduate advisor was thinking. I cannot imagine what was going through his head, because of course he's going to be like, yeah, right. Okay. It was barely a week or two later that he had another blow up, and it wasn't significant. It wasn't physical, or I would remember more. I just remember it was a blow up and he called me a bitch, and I was like, okay. So this was my escape plan. He left town to see his brother, and as soon as he left, I got in my car and I drove down to Edmond and told my parents everything. Everything but the physical stuff. Everything, because I was still too scared to actually admit that that was happening. I knew once I told them everything, I could not go back. I could not go back to that relationship. That was it. Once I told them that, we were done. We were off and running. I remember the next day, I believe, I remember Chris's dad calling me and asking me when I was going to show up at their house, and me having to tell them over the phone that I was leaving Chris and getting a divorce. That was really hard. There was a part of me that wanted to go ahead and drive up there and tell them in person, but I knew if I did that, that there was a slight chance that I might change my mind. Because they were so lovely, and I really enjoyed being a part of their family. And I just could not imagine going up there and telling them that and then staying true to what I'd committed to.
So how did you end up telling him that you were leaving him and that you guys were getting a divorce?
When he came back from being out of town, you know, I had told him we were getting divorced. And the strange thing is, he didn't fight me. He never asked for me back. He never tried to love bomb me back. It was done. He was snarky and he was sarcastic and he would call me names and of course accuse me of being the cause of our marriage not making it, but he allowed me to divorce him. He moved out because my parents owned the house that we were in. Life went on, and then an old man pulled up in my driveway in June, so about 3 months later, and he gets out of this car, and I'm packing up my truck to drive to Tulsa to a wedding that I never made it to, because this man gets out of his car, and he goes, are you Chris's wife? And I said, well, ex-wife. And he said, but you were married to him. And I said, yes. And he said, why did you get divorced? And at that point, I'm really creeped out. And I said, who are you? And why are you here? And why are you talking to me and asking me these questions? Well, apparently he was the husband of the gym owner that he used to go to the gym and work out at. And he was having an affair with his wife. So he had been cheating on me at the end of our marriage. This had started, he said, in February is when he found the sexy texts.
Before you guys were even divorced.
I think that's why he walked away so easy. He was already having an affair with someone else. He apparently had been cheating on me with her at least for a couple months before I got divorced. Well, I was so shocked and also angry that I didn't go to the wedding that I was supposed to go to, which I feel really bad about because it was one of my core college girlfriends. We're still friends to this day, and I feel really bad I didn't go. I'm sorry, babe. But I was just my head was spinning so hard, and I was just in such shock, and I was also so mad that I literally think I drove to Edmond and, like, hooked up with an ex-boyfriend or something. I'm serious. I think I drove to Edmond and hooked up with another douchebag that shouldn't have been. I went on an ex-boyfriend tour. It was a reunion tour. I feel like I could go back and make it, like, it's almost like a double check. Like, I don't think we were right together. Oh, nope, double check. Yep, I was right. And you just move on.
Exactly. Double check. I've done that before.
That's why it was so strange how things ended, because it's not typical, I don't think, in relationships like that to be able to walk away so easy and have him not try and make some spectacle or dysfunction or destruction of my life. He didn't. He moved on, and he moved on fast. Before 6 months had gone by, he was already dating someone that had just graduated high school. So he went right in, and she's just out of high school. So that was a little on the ick factor. But one thing I did that I do recommend to anyone who is trying to conjure up the courage to leave their toxic relationship is to create a list of why this was written in 2005 and I still have it. I know it like belongs in an antique shop. This is a list that I think all men or women who are in a toxic relationship should write. It is why you should leave the relationship. So I encourage people to do this completely free for all. Don't number it. Don't chronologically order it. Like nothing. Just write. And so that's why things might seem a little disjointed or out of order. Blames me for everything. In quotes, you drink too much. I hate it when you drink. I hate you doing this. It's your time of the month. Gets jealous and acts out in front of people. Makes me feel incompetent and like a child. Calls me a slut and accuses me of cheating. Has threatened to hit me and hurt me. In quotes, I have never wanted to hit a girl so bad. I want to break your fucking nose. I want to bash your face in. Oh. One time, the time that he was bouncing my head on the bed and was had his hands around my throat, I said something about the next day when we get up, like referencing, hey, let's finish this tomorrow, like blah, blah, blah. And I remember he turned to me, looked at me, he said, if you wake up.
Oh my God, that's terrifying.
Yeah. So I had forgotten that piece of the story. But yeah, it's on my list. If you wake up. Has physically hurt me twice and then blamed me for it. In quotes, you shouldn't have done what you did. You should have heard what you said to me. Not really caring about my school and acting like and saying that I never do anything. He didn't like to read my work, anything I was writing in grad school. He acts like it bothers him when he does read my work. So basically, yeah, he was dismissive of my school. The romance is gone. Doesn't even act like he's with me in public. So yeah, at the end, he started to ignore me a lot in public. Loses control and inhibitions and temper, especially when he drinks. Says I must be a bad therapist. I feel trapped. I'm so unhappy. I feel worthless. I cry all the time. Makes me feel bad for not having sex when he wants it. Has told me that he has thought of a divorce and that all of his friends know about this because I'm such a horrible wife. Has refused counseling. I thought I could fix this, but I can't. Nothing I try works. I'm compromising myself as a person. I feel there's nothing else I can do. He puts me down in front of people. He's rude to my parents and has called my parents' names. So that's my list. And I know it feels a little like bopping all over the place and stuff or fragmented sentences, but it was just an honest, raw, just flood of ideas.
I love this advice. In fact, I think everyone should do it for your last relationships that have not worked out. How does it make you feel reading it over again now, even after all this time has passed?
It makes my heart beat really fast because I remember I wish I had journaled our entire relationship. I wish I had documented everything from that first horrible incident and on, so I could fully remember and really understand this girl and where she was. I feel so bad for that girl who wrote this because I know that there was even more. I know that this is a snapshot, but you know, out of desperation, I knew that there was just no going back. And I had this up on a magnet on my fridge for years.
Hey, you got to do whatever you got to do to remind yourself that you were completely worthy and that you made the right decision. What happened next between you and Chris?
He moved on. I moved on. Barely saw each other. Every now and then, a message here and there, whatever. But that was it. It was quiet like that until one of our groomsmen, his best friend, messaged me, told me that he had died.
Oh my gosh, what happened?
I don't know. I know the details of he passed away in his sleep. I know that he passed away overnight. I know that he was living in the same building that we had stayed at as a couple, which was eerie in of itself. That the place where we had dreamed about living there, dreamed about having a life there with his parents on the land and our future, he died in that same place, in the same room. One of his best friends told me that he had passed away, invited me to the funeral. I talked with another family member of his and another best friend of his, and they both said, please come. His parents want you to come. Everybody wants you to come. Because he had never remarried.
How many years later was this after your divorce?
We got divorced when I was 24, and he passed away right after I turned 35.
Okay, so 11 years went by.
So when his friend contacted me, I it's hard to make people understand. And grief of a former spouse, especially when you didn't have kids, there's no manual for that. I just felt like I was on this like planet or this island alone because everyone's looking at me like, why are you upset? He was abusive. He was an asshole. He was a psychopath. You were divorced so long ago that nobody understood why I had such grief like I did. But I will tell you, when his friend called me on the phone and told me that he had died, I literally felt a fraction of my soul just like break. There was something that was just like that just busted. I think it's easy when you find out someone that you had once committed your life to, said those vows to, had the wedding, had the future, had the vision, and that you did love at one point, and you find out their life has been cut short, you know, before they even reach the age of 40. I don't know who wouldn't have a reaction to that, because when someone dies, especially that suddenly, you don't fucking remember all the toxic, horrible things. You remember their laugh and their smile and the fact that he had a child of his own at that point and the fact that he has parents and the fact that he has friends and the fact that he still had so many years to live. And you remember that they're, you know, the loving parts about him and the parts that like you were attached to and the parts that were hard or that you were holding on to too tight. You remember all of those things. You don't remember the nights and the memories like I've shared on this podcast. Like that doesn't even like enter into your brain. You know, I had some friends that because we were only married 10 months and together 3 years, who would say, oh, this is just a blip in the road. This is something you'll look back at and laugh or you'll forget about altogether. And that always made me so angry because I was like, no, like this was real. I was married. He was my husband. I was his wife. I took that seriously at the time. Did I need to leave? Yes. Did I need to get divorced? Yes. Was he abusive? Yes. But there was also that part of you, like that values part of loyalty and honesty and being true and trustworthy and compassionate. And it's like that part of you doesn't just die when you break up or get divorced from someone who's like this. And I think when I found out he had died, that part of me like came out, like flooded out. That side of me, like that girl that was with him at the time. And just how tragic it was, just how sad that was for, I mean, he had friends since he was a little kid. That man was able to keep relationships. And that's why that was a flag that wasn't there. He had lifelong friends, lifelong like relatives and his parents still, his brother. Like this was not out of the ordinary in terms of a red flag for that. Like he had really quality people in his life. You know, something that just came to mind that I really want people to know is sometimes what you need to learn from that relationship doesn't really emerge until years, if not decades later. I think we have the starry-eyed delusion a little bit that we get out of that relationship and we do all the empowering things to heal. Which we should. Don't get me wrong. But we listen to the podcasts and we read the books and we go to therapy and we start yoga and, you know, all the things. And all those things, you need to do them. I want you to do them. But the true healing, I don't believe comes until you have a couple more years of really getting to know yourself and fumbling around the world a little bit post-toxic relationship, to where you look backwards, maybe 5, 10, it could be 20 years later, and say, oh, because I feel like you're still in such a cloud of what that relationship did. And then after you get out, you're so determined to be a better person and to get your shit together and be awoken. And you're so immersed in trying to heal that I feel like you miss the actual part of healing. Like the part you really need to get doesn't come till later. And you need to go through your mistakes. You need to go through, you know, the next guy you date and he's like, you think the total opposite and he's perfect on paper, or he's nothing like your ex. And you probably need to go through that and realize that he's the exact same person, just a different face. I'm serious. And I'm not saying that to be pessimistic. I'm saying it to be, you know, hopeful that there are more lessons to be learned from this, that this is not the end all be all. You'll probably have another one. I hope that it's not, you know, ever as toxic and abusive and violent or psychologically damaging as your first oops or wow relationship. But you're probably in for some mistakes afterwards because you're going to be a little bit disoriented. And that's okay as long as you're willing to open your eyes and see, oh, I see what this is now. This is me trying to escape what just happened. And I'm completely like falling for stuff that I normally wouldn't if I hadn't come out of an abusive relationship. Or you have that whole mentality of, oh, at least he doesn't hit me. Or at least he doesn't cheat on me. Like if you have to ever use an at least of, you probably need to evaluate your relationship. If you're even having to use at least statement, you probably have an issue in the relationship. So just be patient is what I'm saying. Be patient. Do all the good things for yourself. Let things unfold. Be excited about your life, but also realize that you're probably going to make some mistakes based on coming out of this place in your life, and just to open up and make space for them, and then know in your heart that it will come to you. But you have to make some mistakes and live life a little bit.
Oh my gosh, I love that advice so much. That really, really resonates with me as I just finalized my divorce and I am newly single. I'm definitely going through my healing journey right now. And what I want to add to that is giving yourself so much love and compassion.
Self-compassion.
You got to find whatever that is that's going to assist you in your healing journey, whether that's through movement, through meditation, through reading books, journaling, you know, find what works for you and really dig into the healing process.
1,000%. And I think that even though we don't want to admit it, I do believe that at the heart of us entering into relationships that are obviously not good for us, that there is a lack of self-compassion and just true love for thyself. So that's a really good place to start.
Thank you, Amanda, so much for sharing your story with all of us. As I mentioned, Amanda is a therapist, and you'll be hearing from Amanda on future seasons as our house psychologist. And I'm just so grateful and excited to have her. Amanda has her own podcast called Psych Junkie, where she covers everything from life struggles, relationships, dating, breakups, parenting, mental health. Honestly, this woman's amazing. She covers it all. I will link it in the show notes for you to check out, and I will also link her Instagram page for you to follow as well. Please check the show notes for available resources to help you or someone you know out of a toxic relationship. 6 months of broken heartache. 6 months of working on myself. 6 months of broken heartache. 6 months of working on myself. Holding on tight, still falling down, but I know.
myself up because I'm